Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's July the 10th. We are in Treyas. So we're starting Ovadia. Ovadia is one parak long. So in the 2 weeks that we have, we should finish it. Ovadia is packed. There's a lot here. So the Navi begins Chazon Ovadia, a vision of Ovadia. Who was Ovadia? We learned about Ovadia extensively in Malachim, because Ovadia lived in the time of Eliyahu HaNavi and in the time of the Rishayim Achav and Izebel. Ovadia was the head of the household of Achav and Izebel. Achav and Izebel were terrible people. Achav is one of the infamous people listed in the Mishnah that lost his chelik in Olam Haba. And Ovadia is called a Yarei Hashem Me'od, someone who greatly feared Hashem. So the story of Ovadia and Eliyahu HaNavi we may discuss, but as of now, the main thing we have to know about Ovadia is where he came from. Ovadia was a ger. He was a convert, and more significantly, he was from Edom. He is a descendant of Esav. Ovadia is a descendant of Esav. And Chazal tell us that Hashem says, Mehem ubahem avi alehem. I'm going to bring destruction upon Edom from within Edom. Because Ovadia's nevuah, which we're about to read, is about the destruction of Edom. We know we are currently in Golas Edom, and the Mashiach, when he comes, is going to mean the destruction of Edom. And Ovadia is from Edom, and his nevuah is all about the destruction of Edom. So Hashem says, I'm going to bring the destruction from within Edom himself. I will destroy Edom. More than that, Chazal tell us, I'll read you what Rashi says here, quoting Chazal, Yavo Ovadia, let Ovadia come, Shedar ben Shnei Rishayim, that he lived amongst two evil people, Achav v'Izevel, v'lolamad mimaseim, he did not learn from their ways, v'yifra me'esav harasha, he should be the one to prophesy about the punishment to Esav harasha, Shedar ben Shnei Tzadikim, Yitzchak v'Rivka, that Esav lived amongst two tzadikim, Yitzchak and Rivka, v'lolamad mimaseim, he did not learn from their ways. Esav managed to grow up in the household of Yitzchak and Rivka and yet be a Rasha. So Ovadia, who is right under the noses of Achav and Izebel, who are two great Rishonim, did not learn from their ways, so he is the one with the nevuah against Esav, who also did not learn from the ways of the people who he was around. He should have learned from Yitzchak and Rivka, he did not, and therefore Ovadia is the one who says the nevuah against Esav. If Ovadia did not learn from the ways of Achav and Izebel, that could not have happened on its own. Normally a person is greatly influenced by the people they're around and the environment that they're in. If Ovadia did not learn from Achav and Izebel, then it would seem that Ovadia put in a lot of effort in order to fear Hashem and to not be influenced by the terrible atmosphere that was pervasive in the house of Achav and Izebel. If he then is coming against Esav, it must be that Esav also expended effort to prevent himself from being influenced by Yitzchak and Rivka. If it would have been something that was not preventable, that Esav couldn't learn from Yitzchak and Rivka, then he would not be blamed. But he is blamed. And therefore, it seems that Esav also put an effort to avoid the influence of Yitzchak and Rivka. He wanted to remain a Rasha. So therefore, Ovadia, who uses the same method of rejecting those around him in order to remain a tzaddik, so he's the one who says the nevuah against Esav. It also seems that this trait of being able to live in an environment and not be influenced is a uniquely Esav trait. Ovadia has the same trait because he comes from Esav. It's not by chance. Ovadia, who comes from Esav, Edom has the ability within them to live in an environment and not be influenced and avoid the influence of the environment. And Esav used that ability in a terrible way, and Ovadia uses it in a very positive way, which then begs the question, why is it that Hashem gave Edom, gave Esav, this unusual ability? Most people are heavily influenced by the places that they live in, the people around them, the atmosphere around them. It's very difficult to not be influenced in a significant way. So Hashem embedded in Esav this ability to reject the influences around him. And Ovadia Yarshin, that he inherited it from his great-great-grandfather, but he used it for good. So if Hashem embedded it in Esav, it must be that Esav was meant to use it for good. That was what it was for. And Ovadia here is the expression of what Esav was supposed to be. Ovadia, perhaps is the poster child of what Esav was always meant to be. He was supposed to be this person who could live amongst terrible Rishayim and not be influenced. Why is it that Hashem would have made Esav have that unique ability? And that is probably, I would surmise, because the original plan was that Esav was to be the primary supporting role to Yaakov. V'rav ya'avod tzair, the older will serve the younger, was meant to be both good for Yaakov and for Esav. It was meant to be a positive thing for both Yaakov and Esav. Originally, the plan was that Yaakov would marry Rachel and Esav would marry Leah. Yaakov would get the bracha of Eretz Yisrael, of Eretz Canaan, which he got at the end of Parashas Toldos, and Esav would get the bracha V'yitein Lecha, which is the bracha that ended up going to Yaakov because of the plan that his mother Rivka put into place. But Esav was meant to get that bracha. That bracha is the bracha V'yitein Lecha, is the bracha of Olam Hazeh, of the physical bounty of this world, and Esav was meant to have that bracha and then use that in the support of Yaakov. And even though Esav never would have been Yaakov, Yaakov was always supposed to be the main heir to Avram and Yitzchak, the legacy of Avram and Yitzchak, but Esav was to be the primary support to that. And along with Leah, they would have formed a nation that would have been the primary support of Yaakov, whose nation would have been the ones living in Eretz Yisrael. In that, of course, it didn't work. Esav did not live up to expectations, but Leah did, and therefore in the end Yaakov had to marry both Rachel and Leah and end up playing both roles. The role of Yaakov and the role of Esav were now both in Yaakov's court. That's why he marries both Rachel and Leah, and that's why he gets both brachos, the bracha of Eretz Canaan, which was always his bracha, and the bracha of Yitein Lecha, which was supposed to be the bracha of Esav. And that's why we today, as Klal Yisrael, have to play both roles. And instead of Esav being our primary support, he's our primary enemy. That's what ends up happening. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Esav this unique ability to be in a hostile environment, meaning hostile environment, and be able to reject that hostility and be able to remain steadfast in his Avodas Hashem, which is what was supposed to happen, which is what Ovadia does, because Esav was the one who was supposed to be out and about in the world. Yaakov was supposed to be ensconced in Eretz Yisrael, doing the Avoda in Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash, etc. That was all supposed to be Yaakov, while Esav was supposed to be out and about and being the primary support to Yaakov. The influences on Esav would have been much more difficult than the influences on Yaakov. Esav's job was, in fact, to insulate Yaakov. That was his purpose. and he was supposed to do it both physically and spiritually, and create that special bubble that would enable Yaakov to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the highest level. But to do so means to be influenced, or to be in an environment of a negative influence. And therefore, Esav, being in that environment, needed this koach, this strength of being able to be in this environment and to reject the environment. In addition to that, simply having the bounty of this world is in itself a very, very difficult influence to be able to, if not reject, but to control and to be able to keep it in its place. As we all know, it's very easy for wealth to corrupt. That's a very easy thing to happen. And Esav was given the unique ability to have all of these influences and yet reject them, or at least keep them in check. That was the special koach that Hashem gave to Esav. He misused it. Not only did he not use it for good, he used it for bad. He used that very koach to reject the positive influences of Yitzchak and Rivka. Ovadia, who comes from Esav and has that same koach, uses it the way Esav was supposed to have used it, and he's able to exist within the household, not only within the household, but to be the head of the household of Achav and Izevel, and yet be the Yarei Es Hashem Ma'od, the one who is the paradigm, the one who fears Hashem. In the end, Esav still retains his position as an enabler for Yaakov to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even today, Esav still retains that position as the primary enabler of Yaakov. It's just that instead of it being in a positive role as someone who is an Oved Hashem and someone whose job is to make sure that Yaakov has all his material needs and is able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu while Esav takes care of everything else. Instead of that, the way that Esav becomes the primary enabler, motivator of Yaakov is through sinna, through hatred, through the anti-Semitism, Esav sone es Yaakov, through his being the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings against us primarily. If Chas V'Shalom we are not behaving, then that ends up pushing us in the right direction. As we, Chas V'Shalom, start to assimilate, Esav hits us over the head. So that's not a good thing. And may Rishayim Yetzei Resha, from evil people come evil things. Megalgalim Chol V'Alidei Chayav, they bring bad things through those who are bad, who deserve bad. And therefore, Esav, instead of being the enabler in a positive way, he's an enabler in a negative way. And the way that he enables does not get him Olam Haba, it gets him Gehenna. Because the way he does it is through hurting Yaakov, which is a terrible thing. But in the end, it does push us to our Avodas Hashem. And that is still the role of the enabler. That is still what is happening, but it's happening in a perverse way. And that's exactly what Hashem tells, what Yitzchak, tells Esav when Esav cries for a bracha, V'haya kasher tarid ufarakta'u lo me'at savarecha. And it will be when you have cause to complain over why does Yaakov deserve the bracha, because Yaakov is not behaving the way he should, then you'll be able to throw his yoke off of you. In the end, we are in control of the seesaw. It's now a seesaw. When we're up, he's down. When we're down, he's up. But we control the seesaw. It's how we behave. What he does has no bearing on the seesaw. He can be as good as he wants. It's not going to matter. All that matters is the way we behave. If we behave properly, we're up and he's down. If Chas V'Shalom, we don't behave properly, we go down, he goes up. That's the way it works. That is a result of Esav rejecting his role and yet being forced into the role that he has to play anyway as the enabler. This is a good example, perhaps the best example, of the just in general a philosophical approach to life, that a person's job in life, you can't take a different job. Your job is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you. And you can try to reject it, and it's going to happen anyway. But if it's forced down a person's throat, it's not going to be pleasant. And it's not pleasant for Esav. It's not good for him. It's not pleasant in this world. It's not pleasant after he dies. But he tried to throw off the job Hashem gave him, and Hashem told him, it's too bad, this is your job, and I'll shove it down your throat if you're not going to accept it. And he does. So Esav is still playing the same role, but in a very negative way, and it does not get him anything good in the world to come. Yeah.
Is Esav the Western culture?
We don't know for certain. We assume that's the case. Edom is Esav. Edom is Rome. We don't know today what is that iteration of Esav for sure.
The it seems like today they don't have that insular power.
Yeah,
anymore.
Well, it depends. Insular for what?
No, from the society around them.
Well, they're interested. Like they're Esav is interested in physicality. That's what he's interested in. He was rejecting spirituality. That's what he was rejecting, right? Okay. So, but we don't know. It's everything's a mishmash today. We don't know who Edom is. We don't know who Moab is. Who Ammon is. Amalek is the worst of Edom. Is the worst of Esav. So, we assume that Hitler, Yimach Shemo, and the Nazis were Amalek. That's what we assume, but we don't know that for certain. We assume that to be the case. Was Soviet Russia, were they Amalek? We don't know. We don't know. We can only surmise. But that is Esav's job, is Esav Sone as Yaakov. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if, because Yaakov in the end had to do both roles, so he also hid in Lobangarti Vitarek Mitzvah Shamarti, and Rivka was living with Mishaim, and so we are children of Rivka and children of Yaakov, and because we have to do both, maybe we also have this insulating.
Yeah. So this koach of living amongst Rishayim and not learning from them comes from the Imahos. All the Imahos grew up in houses of Rishayim. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah all grew up in houses of Rishayim. Now Avraham grew up in a house of Arasha, but Yitzchak and Yaakov did not. They grew up in houses of Tzaddik.
But he still went to Laban.
No, I know. So right, it's true in Laban Gati Vitarik Mitzvah, but it comes from his mother. That koach comes from the Imahos, to be able to not be influenced. That is where it comes from. But that was supposed to be Esav's legacy from the Imahos. That's where he was supposed to take that and be the one to use that in the service of protecting Yaakov. So it's true, we have that to a certain extent. We have it to a certain extent. It's really Esav's koach that now Yaakov has to take over. That's right.
He had to take everything. So.
He ran away from, he took the bracha, ran away from Esav, and then it's very, I surmise that his being in 14 years in Beis Aver before he ran away was in order to internalize this particular koach, which is to go someplace where there are only positive influences in order to get that strength to then be able to move on to love and where he would be able to be that way of Tayrig Mitzvah Shamarti.
So he had to also get it.
He had to. It also, it seems to me that we've talked about this in the past many years ago, especially around Hanukkah time, we spoke about this, that it seems to me that our stop in this Golas, our this last Golas, the Golas of Edom, which we may be right now in the worst of it, in the most intense part of it, because it's the end of it, is for us to learn that from our hosts. In other words, that we're supposed to learn from Edom how not to be influenced by Edom. That's, we are in Edom right now, or whatever that means, to be in Edom. We're in Golas Edom, and our job is not to be influenced by Golas Edom, and instead to be able to stay steadfast in our Avodas Hashem. Until now, until our generation or our generations, the past few generations, we were forced into our shtetls, we were insulated, but the way we are today, where we have at our fingertips everything that the world has to offer, and it's our job to stay steadfast. That is the koach of Esav, which finds expression in Ovadia. I want to mention, although this is a somewhat of a digression, just because it's this week's parsha, that it also, this is my own suggestion. It seems to me in this week's parsha, Parshas Chukas, where Klal Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu ask Edom if they could go through Edom to get into Eretz Yisrael. And Edom says no, and then they try again. And Edom says absolutely not, and they come out with a sword. And they say, you may not go through. And then Klal Yisrael has to go around Edom. It seems to me that what's going on there is a last-ditch effort to give Edom a chance to be an enabler in somewhat of a positive way. At least let us go through your land. into Eretz Yisrael. At least that, you can at least in that way redeem yourself to some extent, like a little bit. So it won't be a positive enabling, but at least there'll be a passive enabling. You'll let us go through. And Adam says, no, absolutely not. Nothing doing. Adam completely rejects the role of positive enabler. In you see that in this week's parsha.
So you said that Yaakov had to learn the insulation
of the Mishnah. It's not Shem had already passed that. It was the Beis Aver.
So, but what did Esav do to learn it?
I think in Esav it was innate. I think the koach is innate. He just used it wrong.
So what made him?
I think that was one of his koachas. Hashem gave him a koach. People have different koachas.
Right, and then he used it exactly the opposite.
He used it. It's still the same koach. He just used it the wrong way. Now, Ovadia, when he lived in the days of Eliyahu HaNavi, what we learned about then was that Izebel, the evil queen, murdered the Nevi'im. She went on a rampage and it was with an agenda, and she systematically murdered the Nevi'im. And Ovadia took 100 Nevi'im and hid them in 2 different caves, and in that way was able to save those Nevi'im. And he provided them with bread and water in order to spare them. He did this under the noses of Ahav and Izebel. They did not know about it. Therefore, Ovadia also is the unspoken name in another significant story in the Navi, which is that of Eshes Ovadia, the wife of Ovadia, which is the story with the oil. What happened over there is that Ovadia, because he had to support 100 Nevi'im, he needed the money to be able to support them. How do you support 100 people? That's a lot of mouths to feed. So the way he did it is he had to borrow money. He borrowed money from Achav's son, from Yeravam ben Achav. That's who he borrowed the money from. The Gemara tells us that Achav's generation, although they were terrible Rishayim and of the Avodah Zarah, murderers, Gilui Arayas, just terrible things going on, but they did not speak Lashon Hara. The way we know they did not speak Lashon Hara is because Ovadia borrowed large sums of money from Yeravam ben Achav, and he never told his father. They never discussed it, because how could that be? I mean, he was a Rasha. Yeravam ben Achav was a Rasha. He took the money, he charged interest. That's why when he was killed, it says he was killed bein zroosav, between his arms, because he reached out to take the interest, which you're not allowed to do. He took interest for the money that he lent. He was not a tzaddik, but he did not speak Lashon Hara. That is because, as we learned at the time, the culture in Malchus Yisrael was, we don't talk about other people. That was the culture. The culture was, it just wasn't cool to speak about other people. You just don't do that. You don't do that. So even though it was a terrible culture, there were terrible things going on, but this one thing they did properly and they excelled at it. They did not talk about other people. And they didn't speak Lashon Hara. And the Gemara says that therefore Achav won his wars, that he did not lose the battles that he fought. And that is because they were protected from the losing wars because of this tremendous zuchus of not speaking about other people, not speaking Lashon Hara. Whereas, in the time of David HaMelech, when they were great tzaddikim, but there was dilturia, there was some Lashon Hara going on, and because of that, they did lose some wars. So that is a point that Gemara makes, and which the Chafetz Chaim brings in his Sefer to talk about the importance of refraining from Lashon Hara. Ovadia, having borrowed all that money, when he died, had not yet paid it back, and it was with interest. And therefore, Yeravam ben Achav, the one he borrowed the money from, came to Ovadia's widow to take her 2 sons as slaves to pay off the debt. That would have been the paying off the debt. They would have become slaves to Yeravam ben Achav. And that's where you find that Eshes Ovadia, the wife of Ovadia, comes to Elisha HaNavi and says that I'm stuck. What am I going to do? And my husband was a Yarei Es Hashem Me'od. That's how we know who it is. My husband was this person who feared Hashem and greatly. Who's that? That's Ovadia. So that's when Elisha tells her to go. He asks her, what do you have in the house? She only has one flask of oil. Go borrow as many utensils as you can, and then you'll pour the oil. We'll continue to fill up all the flasks. They do that. Then the price of oil skyrockets. Olive oil skyrockets. And she sells, he tells her to sell the oil, and she does, and there's enough money to live forever after. They live happily ever after. So that is the wife of Ovadia, and that was with Elisha, meaning that Elisha succeeded Eliyahu as the Navi, as the main Navi. Ovadia is with Eliyahu, and then after he dies, his sons and his widow, they interact with Elisha. Yeah.
I again am having trouble with the concept that we are given the leader that we deserve, and then on the other hand, here are these people who, these leaders are bad, Ahab and his son are evil, and yet the people aren't speaking Lashon Hara. So I'm having trouble accepting both of those at the same time here again.
Yeah, I can't answer you other than to say that human beings are complex. They can be very good at one thing and very bad at something else. I mean, we see that all the time.
I know, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand
it's
what you're
one
saying.
After the other.
I get it. Yeah. No, I get it. I don't have a good answer. So this gives us some background, some understanding of who this Ovadia is. So he's from Edom, and he is the head of the household, which means he was, that's like a top cabinet position. He was a major player in the Ahav government. He wasn't the king, but he was a major player.
Was he accepted as a convert because he was a male from Edom?
Yeah, he was accepted. Yeah.
Moab.
It was just Moab.
Yeah, only Moab. Now, in Edom, you can't, an Edom convert can't marry a regular Jewish girl until the third generation. So an Edom convert has to marry another Edom convert, or someone else, another convert, until three generations before they can marry into.
So do we know anything about his wife?
We don't know. She's Eshes Ovadia. We don't know her name. We don't know she's the wife of Ovadia. Obviously, she had to be a special person to marry to a person like this. That goes without saying. And that Elisha did a nace for her and for her sons. Clearly, she was a great tzaddik.
We don't know if her sons were second or third generation.
Right, we don't know the...
How long did Elisha live? I thought Elio was like in much earlier. Like Melachim Aleph.
Elio is at the very end of Melachim Aleph. And Elisha then takes over from Malachi Beis.
Okay, thank
you. Okay. So that's who we're dealing with. Now, his nevuah here is not a story. That's all a story. It's nice hearing about stories. The nevuah is about the destruction of Edom. So, the pasuk says, Chazon Ovadia, a vision of Ovadia. Komar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem Elokim le'edom to Edom. Shmua shamanu me'es Hashem. We've heard a news from Hashem. Vitzir bagoyim shulach. And an ambassador is sent amongst the nations. Kumu v'nakuma aleha la'milchama. Let us get up. And let's rise up against Edom for war. That the nations will rise up against Edom for war. Hine katon nisaticha bagoyim. Hashem says, I have made you the small amongst the nations. Bazoi atam ma'od. You are very degraded. The pasuk in the Chumash says that Esav was bino hagadol. The older, the bigger son of Yitzchak. So here the Navi, to counteract that title of Bino HaGadol, the big son, the older son, so he's called Katan. He's, Hashem says, I'm going to make you the lowliest of the nations rather than the leader of the nations. You think that your position, you deserve to be the leader of the nations, and of course Edom for a long time is the leader of the nations of the world, but Hashem says, you are degraded, you are of the lowest of the nations. Now, he was degraded, Edom was degraded in several ways. The Gemara tells us, Edom did not have loksav v'lo lashon. They did not have a unique alphabet, and they did not have a unique language, that everything was borrowed. The Romans did not create their own language nor their own alphabet. Everything was borrowed from the Greeks. That's where they segued from there. Whereas you find before Edom that the differences between the powers of the world as you move from Bavel to Paras, Persia, to Yavan, to Greece, they're all very different. They're completely different in their cultures, in their language. One does not segue from the other. They are really completely different cultures, different languages that take over one from the other. But when Esav steps in Edom, taking over from the Greeks, is borrowing from Greek culture. It is not a unique thing. And in that way, they are considered to be Bazoi, they're considered to be degraded and katan and small. In addition, the Gemara tells us that Edom was unable to be maimed melech ben melech. They could not sustain a dynasty. They were unable to have a king, a prince, become king. In the list of kings, the first eight kings of Edom, which are listed at the end of Parshas Vayishlach, every single one is a new family. None of their children took over for them. Except that it was a new family each time. This is considered to be bazui. This is very degraded, that they're unable to maintain a dynasty. And that is a degrading thing to be unable to do. It's considered to be a praise that a nation is able to sustain a dynasty. This dynasty is the dynasty of this. They represent the nation. But Edom was unable to do that. They could not sustain a dynasty. That means several things. First of all, it means that there was never a smooth transition. As one king died and another king took over, it was never simple, never smooth. There would always be infighting. Who's going to have the influence and the power to take over for the previous king? It was always a rocky road to go from one king to the next. It's a great bracha when it goes smoothly from one to the other. That's number one. And number two is that policies were therefore constantly changing. You find in the Gemara, where the Gemara, remember, is written, the Mishnayos are written during through the destruction of the first base Hamikdash, second base Hamikdash, excuse me, and into the years following the second base Hamikdash, they are under the control of Edom, of Rome, as the Mishnayos are being written, the Gemara as well is being written under the Edom. Edom is in control of the world. Now it happens to be that Bavel, which is where Talmud Bavli was written, the Gemara was written, was a small bubble that was not really under Roman control, not as much as the rest of the known world. But certainly the great power of the world was Edom in the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash and onward throughout those first several centuries following the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. You find in the Gemara several times that there is a gzera, there's a decree, an evil decree that is made, and the decree has to be dealt with, but then the Caesar, the Caesar, dies, and with his death goes his decrees. So why should that be? Why doesn't the successor continue the decrees of the previous Caesar? It's because the successor is not his son. He cleans house. It's a new thing. Everything's new. There's always a new culture, a new leader, and therefore you have to get used to something new. And things are never, you don't have that continuity. It's not a simple or easy transition in Edom. I wonder, like everybody else, whether the United States is some iteration of Edom. It would make sense that it would be, since we're supposed to be in Galus Edom now. I cannot tell you that it is or isn't, but it is interesting to me that the presidency of the United States never has a melech ben melech. Even the one time we had a son after a father, it was not direct. There was another president in between the two, the father and son. So I can't tell you if that is a fulfillment of this or not, but Edom is officially unable to create a dynasty. They can't do it.
We also, as Malchi Yehuda, he also didn't have had issues where there wasn't the same rules.
You could have issues, but you don't have to have issues. There are times when there were problems.
There are more times with problems than that.
No. Most of Malchi Yehuda were tzaddikim. Of Malchi Yehuda were tzaddikim. There were some that weren't, of course, and there were some notable ones where they were terrible, but most of them were tzaddikim, especially the first half. When you get toward the second half, then you have more Rishayim in the mix. But in the first half, most of them were tzaddikim. And the transitions were mostly smooth, most of the time. Most of the time it was a smooth transition. Even David HaMelech to Shlomo, where there was a potential of there being a terrible civil war, but there wasn't in the end. It ended up being smooth. Adoniyahu was a threat, but in the end it didn't happen. It melted away. So there was mostly smooth transitions for us, but not Esav. Esav has a rocky road the entire time. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Zidon libcha hishiecha. The evil of your heart has led you astray. Shochni v'chag v'sela mirom shivto. The clefts of the rock? How do they translate it?
Look
at that. Okay. How about that? The clefts of the rock, with his dwelling very high up, meaning the talking about Edom, thinks I'm so high, I'm so powerful, I'm in this mighty stone precipice. Omer Bilibo says in his heart, Mi ori deini aretz, who will bring me down to the ground? So Hashem says, Im tagbia kanesher, if you go as high as an eagle, vim bein kochavim sim kinecha, and if you put your dwelling at your nest amongst the stars, misham oridcha nuam Hashem, from there I will bring you down, says Hashem. I will take you down.
Rome is like Rome.
Good. I assume Rome has to do with Rome. I assume with room, with heights. I assume that's what it has to do with. Im ganavim ba'u lecha, if thieves come to you, im shodedei laila, if those who pillage at night come to you, they come and they attack. Ech nid mesa, why? How have you been sleeping? How did you sleep through that? Halo yignivu dayam, they will steal as much as they want. If you sleep through it when the burglar breaks in, so then they'll take whatever they want. So that's a mashal for what's going to happen to Edom. You're going to be powerless to stop them. They're going to come, they're going to take all of your material wealth, all this great wealth that you have, they're going to pillage you, they're going to take it. Im botsrim ba'ulach, normally, if those who harvest the grapes come to you, normally, halo yashiru olelos, normally they'll leave behind at least the poor quality grapes, the olelos, at least that they'll leave behind. They'll take all the nice stuff, but they'll leave behind the stuff that isn't so good. But that's not what's going to happen to you, Esav. They're gonna bleed you dry. They're gonna take everything you have. Eich nech besu Esav, how has Esav been searched? Has been completely pillaged, searched through. Niv'u matzpunav, it has been revealed that which is hidden from people. All of his wealth will be completely taken away from Esav when the time comes. Now, we have seen at least Rome itself. This is what happened to Rome in the end. In the end, they were completely decimated by outside forces. But that can't be the end of Edom, because we're still in Galus Edom. So it means it's just migrated to something else. We don't know exactly what that is, but it's migrated to something else. But in the end, their material wealth will be completely taken away.
So who was we learned Amos, and he was talking to the Bnei Yisrael at that time, the Malchei Yisrael, Shifta Yisrael mostly. Who's Avadya talking to?
He's obviously talking to us, but he's really talking to Esav. And that's the funny thing. Ovadia's nevuah is really a nevuah for Esav. But we're the ones who have it. It's clearly to us. We have to know that this is about Esav. We need to know that this is ultimately what's going to happen to Esav.
But isn't Nevi'im talking during their time?
Yes. I can't tell you who was the audience when he actually said these words. I don't know. Ovadia probably had to say Nevuah in a secretive way. Because, again, he was in Achav and Izebel's house. So Izebel was killing Nevi'im. His whole Nevuah is one parak long. That's it. This is the entire Nevuah. So it must have been done in a way that Achav and Izebel didn't know about it.
Who wrote this?
I imagine Ovadia himself wrote his Nevuah. I imagine that's
wrote
it. The Gemara says no. The Treasure was put together. I think it says the Anshei Knesset HaGadol. I think, but I don't remember. The issue is who put it together. You know, but I'm seeing the individual Nevuah. This is probably written by Ovadia himself. I imagine.
It's so refreshing after all the almost.
Sad, oh yeah, sad. This is all good. Ovadia is a great.
So what we needed today.
Yeah. Now this is not. But I meant, friends, this is the Haftarah for Parshas Vayishlach. Parshas Vayishlach, which is with the face-off between the showdown between Yaakov and Esav, and at the end of Vayishlach, you have the entire Esav family is described in great detail. This is the Haftarah for Parshas Vayishlach. I always enjoy it every year reading. Yes.
Also, because Esav, and then goes, this is all you got. You know, then it's finished, and the rest of the Torah is about.
Yeah, right.
So.
That's it. Yeah.
Could this be a reference to when Mashiach comes in the war of
Gog and Magog? Well, for sure, I know about Gog and Magog. This is for sure about Mashiach. You'll see the last pasuk is that famous pasuk of Ve'olu Moshim Bahar Tzion Lishpot Es Har Esav. That famous pasuk that we say, we'll get to it, Mitzvah Hashem, next week, but we'll get to it. That is Ovadia. That's the final pasuk of Ovadia.
So would you say the destruction of the Roman Empire would be like partial?
It has to be the beginnings, but it's been 1500 years since that happened. So I mean, you know, right, we're still in Galus Adam. It would mean that it was a ripe time for us to get out of Galus, because if they're being destroyed, but it didn't happen, so it must have reawakened someplace else. It must have just migrated. Now, the Gemara tells us this pasuk vav, a fascinating thing. The word niv'u, the word niv'u means to be revealed, or to be sought after, to look through. The thing is like this, that the first Mishnah in Maseches Bava Kama. Maseches Bava Kama is the beginning of Seder Nezikin, all about damages. And the first Mishnah in Bava Kama begins, Arba Avos Nezikin Hain. There are four Avos, like Lamites Malachos are called Avos, the 39 Malachos. So there are four Avos Nezikin. There are four main categories of damagers. Hashor, V'habor, V'ha'esh, V'ha'maveh. Shor bar eish and maveh. It should probably be mivaeh, but in Yeshivish they say maveh. So shor bar eish and maveh. Shor is a bull. It's a reference to all animals that damage. A person owns an animal. The animal does damage. Bar is a pit. So that would be any kind of object that a person leaves around and people stumble over. Eish is a fire. So things that travel that are not alive. And they travel and destroy. And the last one is Mav'ed. Now, there's a discussion in the Gemara. What is Mav'ed? What does that mean? What does the word mean? Mem, Vez, Ayin, He. It's a funny word. So the Gemara says, according to one explanation, perhaps it's the main explanation, Mav'ed is Adam. Adam, man, is one of the four Avos Nezikin. Man does damage. We damage. So, whether on purpose or by accident, but people damage. So, it's one of the Avos Nezikin. So, the Gemara says, how does the word Maveh mean Adam? How does the word mean Adam? So, the Gemara says, because the word Maveh comes from the word imtibayun ba'ayu. If you want, you will want. If you seek, you will seek. To be imtibayun ba'ayu, which is a pasuk in Yeshaya, means to desire, to want, to seek something. It's a reference to davening. To be timtibayun ba'ayu means man is one that speaks, that asks, that wants things and asks for it and seeks that thing. That's what the word means. Man there is described as a mevaeh, that's why I say it's probably mevaeh, maveh, as one who davens, one who seeks. Now we know that man is distinct from animal, from animals, in that man has a nishmas chayim, which is ruach memalala, that we are able to speak. That is what distinguishes us from animals. Here, this word niv'u matzpunav is the same root. This word niv'u matzpunav, it was revealed, the hidden things. It comes from the same thing, because the word revealed here is not, it's not the usual word for revealed. Usually you would say like nisgale, that would be to reveal. Galoy is to reveal. This word nivu matzmav means it was sought out. It was searched out, all of his hidden things. That there is a that everything that was hidden was sought out by the enemies of Esav. As man is ultimately a mivah, man is a seeker. Man seeks out things and wants things, asks for things. That's what a human being is. The word mave or mevaet is ultimately a reference to a human being's ambition, that people want, people desire, and people go at great lengths to get those things. And that's what it means, that imtibayun ba'ayu, if you seek out, you will seek out, you will want, you will daven, you will look for something. Here, the enemies will seek out that which Esav has. It seems to me that this word is being used here to bring out the same point that we were mentioning before in another, just from another angle, which is that Esav has great ambition. Esav greatly desires and wants. It's just that he's using it the wrong way. He greatly and wants and desires physicality, materialism, Olam Hazeh. But that drive, that ambition was really put there to want and desire Olam Hazeh for the purpose of Ruchnius, for the purpose of supporting and Yaakov. When I say support, I don't only mean giving Yaakov the Parnasa, like Yisachar Zevulun. I don't only mean that. I mean support like protecting, creating that atmosphere where Yaakov can function without the concerns of the world around him. That's what Esav's primary job is. And he's supposed to use the bounty of this world for that. That's what the drive is there for. But Esav doesn't do that. Instead, he makes the bounty of this world an end in and of itself, not a means to an end, but he makes it what he's after. And therefore, the very first klala, curse against Esav that we have, is about his things, about his wealth, that he will be completely pillaged and it will be completely taken from him, because that's what Esav has replaced his primary role with. Instead of making these things the source of fulfilling his role as the supporter of Yaakov, instead he turns them into the reason for his existence and his drive and his ambition. And therefore the very first thing that we have is that he will be completely pillaged and lose everything, all of the materialism that he so carefully has built up over the centuries. Okay, now, okay, we have another 15 psukim to go in Ovadia. I think we're gonna pause here. It's a good place, just because it's a good place to stop. And Mir Tashem, next week we will bleed out to finish Ovadia. We're going to read through the Psukim, and then also we have a little bit more to do on the broader message of Ovadia, which is relevant, of course, to Esav, but he doesn't care. He's not listening. But it's relevant to us as well. And so, Mitzvah Hashem, next week we will cover that.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.